So the reality is, in life, the definition of success is really something that you choose to create for yourself. It's not what other people say it is, it's what you choose to make it.
Hi, and welcome to the Leadership Now series with Nick Vujicic and Christine Grimm, Aria Consulting, 23 years of executive coaching, and I'm humbled that she is my coach. I could not lead without the sound coaching from Christine. I'm so glad, Chris, that we get to coach everyone watching. Tell us what we're going to be experiencing here on this series.
Yeah, we're going to coach you around leadership, around real challenges, how to navigate the challenges that you have right now, and how to feel good about it.
I'm so excited, Chris. You're going to be sharing with us also your pool of CEOs that can bring in and chime in some principles from their experience as well. Thank you for joining us here on the Leadership Now series. Here's today's episode.
Hi, everyone. I'm so excited that we have here online Christine Grimm, founder and CEO of Aria Consulting, my own coach, my own dear friend. Chris, love you so much. We're so excited about today's special guest. How excited are you?
I'm over the moon. I get two men who have Wikipedia profiles. When does that happen?
I love it. Sean Lipman is joining us today. I've got actually a shortened introduction, but I tell you, I could never memorize so many points of this. Sean Lipman, South African. I love South African people. First of all, before I get you to say hello to everyone, Sean, you've represented the U.S. all over the world as an athlete in the Hall of Fame, U.S. Rugby Hall of Fame 2019, inducted into the National Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. You've also rubbed shoulders with other greats, Sandy Koufax, Mark Spitz, Sean Green. If anybody hears those names, I'm sure that rings bells. Sean, you're not just an accomplished entrepreneur. You're a man that just never stops and goes faster and faster. We're talking about a man who has sold a number of diverse companies, from healthcare, entertainment, e-commerce, and a real estate. You currently serve, Sean, as a CEO of Feedonomics, a product feed internet platform. And you are certainly a man of principle. You're certainly a man who has held on to the gold of wisdom, perspective, and empowering all the people around you. Sean, I am not someone who likes my introductions when someone gives me an introduction. I am not good at introducing other people, but I just want to say, let me tell you, Sean, it's an honor, a privilege, and a joy that we get to have an open-hearted, open-minded conversation with yourself, me, and Chris here. Sean, welcome to the program at Leadership Now.
It's probably a first, but I'm pretty speechless. I don't know what to say.
Isn't it awesome when someone reads off all the things that you've done? See? That was like your life in a minute.
Oh, I want to tell you, Sean, it's an honor and a privilege, and I'm so excited. As a rugby fan, come on. When I say South Africa, many people don't understand that there's some rivalry between, first of all, South Africans and Australians. Can you explain to everyone why I'm so excited that we get to talk about and check it out, calling it moving the goalposts, right? We know that this is what we're talking about, Chris. And before I hand it over to you, everyone watching, we're so excited to understand that in this reset mode, in this disruption, in whatever industry you're in and whatever mode of operation you're currently going through, I'm sure you're stressed, and this is going to help ground you back as we talk about success. And the title of today's episode, Sean, is Moving the Goalposts. And that came out of your mouth with a pre-production call, and it just, me and Chris, like jumping up and down, so perfect of something we're going to go through. But mate, I just want you to know, I love every South African, even though we don't like you with cricket and rugby. How do you explain to an American, right? You're on the U.S. team, Rugby Hall of Fame. How did you ever explain to an American what rugby is when they've never seen it before? I'm so curious.
Well, the people who play rugby in the States are diehard fans. And so I found that, you know, I found my kindred spirits when I came over here, because I managed to find a rugby club with a lot of Americans who were avid fans. And then the people who haven't heard of it maybe came into contact with it, like at college where it was a frat game. And they just thought about it as like the guys used to drink a lot of beer. And the rest of the people, you say it's like soccer and football without the pads. So that's about as far as you can get.
I love it. Do you know that I was this close to becoming a rugby player myself? I just got afraid that someone would just mistake me for a ball instead. Chris, over to you. Have you? I love you, Chris.
You.
Let's go. Talking about, obviously, during these times of uncertainty, Chris, yeah. I mean, there's just no better way to get into the next topic here.
Mm-hmm. I I'm thrilled to have the two of you together. As you know, we talked about in our kind of prep call, but I think everybody needs to hear us. You know, I think a month or so ago, people were talking about what was happening in the world as temporary. And we're kind of living in the moment, but believing that decision-making and things that were going on really were kind of short-term, temporary, and we're projecting into the future. But now it feels like, and remember, I talk to leaders all day, every day, people are starting to see that, okay, so first of all, this isn't so temporary. I need to start making some decisions in my business that maybe a month ago I didn't know I was going to have to think about. Some people doing real reboots. So I felt like it was so appropriate for us to tee this up this way and maybe have Sean first talk a little bit about the pivots that you've made, Sean, and, you know, how at Feedonomics you've been, you know, thinking about what's going on. And then I know, Nick, you've got some great, not so great, but great things to share about how you're handling the current situation too.
Love it. Love it. Sean, moving the goalposts. Talk to us about this. What does this mean in the current situation for everyone listening?
Well, you know, I think it's really a life premise. My whole life I've been involved in, you know, I came out to the US with a backpack, didn't have any real perspective of where my life was going to go. And then both in the context of business and in life and then in sports, nothing ever happens the way you expect it's going to happen, for better and for worse. And so you're going to go through stages of tremendous success, and then you're going to have setbacks. And it's actually learning how to deal with the setbacks is what really prepares you to deal with situations like this. And so in sports, you want to win the trophy, you want to win the tournament, you want to, you know, have success, and then ultimately you'll lose. And then it's the way you respond to the losses, both in life and in business, that really sets you up for the next step. I actually read a book recently, which was pretty good, Man's Search for Meaning with Viktor Frankl. And the one thing that stood out to me is it's not about success or failure, but it's the nature of your response. And so in the context of this, it's been kind of a prevailing trend in my life. And then the other one is, having got more and more involved in running businesses and being an athlete and then being a coach, which is where I really had to learn it. Because as an athlete, it's very indulgent. It's very self-centric. Whereas when you become a coach, it's about how do you mobilize broader teams to deal with adversity and mobilize. And so it's really in the losses that I learned the most about how do you now create a reset. Okay, we're not going to win the tournament. Mm-hmm. We're going to play for a bronze medal. So now, how do you take away the disappointment of not winning a gold or a silver? And how do you get everybody excited about winning a bronze, which is still winning? Mm. Or when I was coaching my kids when they were in, you know, little kids soccer, and they were being beat by teams by 10 goals or 12 goals. Yeah. So then you'd say, well, if we can just score a goal, that's going to be winning. So the reality is in life, the definition of success is really something that you choose to create for yourself. It's not what other people say it is. It's what you choose to make it. And so in the context of what's happened with the COVID is our company, we started it from scratch, me and my best friend and other two partners who are brothers, and just we are a phenomenal team together. And we started from zero, and we grew in about 5 years to about 160 people, growing 3,000% or some crazy number. And we were scheduled this year to grow 65% and just flying. And then the world stopped. And then all of our people had to go home, and some of our people got COVID. Some of our people had family members that got COVID. And so suddenly you've got to say, wait a second, are we losing now? Are we failing now because we're not going to hit 65%? And A, I think you've got to basically come to terms with the loss. You say, okay, we lost. We lost that game. And now how do we reset and create a new construct for what we define as success? Keeping all of our employees healthy, number one. Keeping all of our employees employed, number two. Keeping all of our employees sane and reducing some of the anxiety through this process, number three. So that really becomes your new definition of success, and that becomes the new baseline for what you'll consider as winning. And then as you evolve through the process, you look at what the world throws at you, and then you redefine what success is. But if you constantly hold yourself to the old premise of what you thought was success, you're going to fail. Mm-hmm. It's a given.
Mm-hmm. In a big way.
And the only people who really have the choice, we have the choice to decide what winning and losing is. And once you do redefine it, I think you've got a better chance of getting people to mobilize around it and then effectively act and perform the actions they need to do to actually actualize on what you need to do to get through it. And so that's really kind of what we've done. The other thing is foundation, is if you only start when things go bad on building a foundation, you're in trouble.
That's right.
And so I think that's the same for building a life, building a family, building friendships, building sporting teams, building community groups. It's the same for a company. And so you can't suddenly have an organization that doesn't really stand for anything and then suddenly say, oh my goodness, the chips are down. Everybody, we need to band together and come together. That has to be the fundamental premise to how you live your life in good times, in bad times, when you're 3 people, 10 people, 30 people, 150 people. And I think fortunately for us is that was the prevailing premise to our business from day one. When it was just the 4 of us, we said, what do we stand for? What are our principles going to be? Who are we? Are we just trying to make some money? Are we trying to sell a technology product? Or are we going to try impact other people's lives? And are we going to live by a set of principles that are going to kind of create the glue for us to hold each other and ourselves accountable? And I think because we focused on that really, really early, when things went, when this all came down, we were much better prepared to speak a common language with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that's helping us get through it as well. I really do. And including myself personally.
Mm-hmm. Sean, what you've said is so profound. And I know the two of you, I'm sure, kind of take it for granted. And I hope that the two of you don't, but I want for anybody who's watching and listening to realize that everything you just explained, Sean, is really hard for a lot of people. and not just because of your second point, right? So if you don't set the foundation for how are we gonna work on things and deal with it when we lose? How are we going to experience adversity together? And most leaders, you know, have to learn that through adversity. They don't proactively think that way. So I think that, first of all, is really important. I wanna stress that. And I think, Nick, you have your own version of the story, but, you know, you've always been a master reframer. That's what I call you, in your life. But I think this year, it's really being tested, just like Sean was saying, this year, right, with everything going on.
Yeah, a lot. I would have to say, first of all, those three fundamental principles that you first shared, I mean, I feel like I want to just unpackage those three, but before we go to those three, I couldn't agree with you more, Chris, that, you know, you have to know those fundamental things. And I feel like I've known that for 20 straight years. I know who I am in my identity between my spirit, soul, and mind, that the existence of who I am personally and my value has nothing to do with money or recognition or any of that. Yet, even when you have such a strong core foundation, you know, like I was smirking when Sean, you were saying, yeah, you know, building your company or rebuilding or whatever the word is, when in crisis, sure, you got the foundation, but man, just above the foundation, it feels like everything was just wiped away.
So true.
And and that's a good thing, where it's almost like, be thankful for that, because I'm going to tell you right now, as somebody who speaks about value and decision-making processes and being thankful and an attitude of gratitude, without that, you can't reframe anything. And even if you were the expert reframer, you're building really emptiness in the end. And so I'm curious, you know, for those people who don't have that foundation, who are listening to us, how does somebody actually first get to that first priority? Okay, well, maybe I don't have that foundation. I don't know the truth of some of these things. What does maybe someone have to ask themselves and reflect on to first build that? Because we all know that's the first and most important step.
I think it's thankfulness. You know, I honestly think at the core of life, I'm not exceptionally spiritual in a formalized way, but I think if you really, really know what your why is, and whatever that why is, it makes it easier. Mm-hmm. And so then it's around about looking around and saying that, am I living my why? And if the why is about your family, if it's about doing good for other people, if it's about living with integrity and having an ethical premise to how you're going to live, and kind of framing when I go down, what is the legacy I'm going to leave to the people that I had an opportunity to impact? And so that now takes you out of the material. We have to get through this materially. We need money. We have to support our families. We want to always do better. But at the end of the day, if your foundation is based on that and you're not losing that, then you've got a foundation to build on. It's when you don't have that anchor or that North Star, whatever that is, I think it's really exceptionally difficult. And I think from a business perspective, companies that don't have that why or don't have that foundation and they just kind of existing, I think they have a lot of trouble keeping their people, keeping their direction and coming out of this. So I think it translates both personally into the business sense as well.
I love that. I'm so excited with people listening, because maybe they realize, yeah, there was some one day, you know, that I'm going to look into my purpose and look for that North Star. No better time, right, than right now. Sean, you did in your 3 points talk about motivating your team, that when the old plan is done, you got to redefine what success is. How do you motivate them to play on the field, knowing they're not playing now for the gold or gold, but the bronze? How do you do that? I've motivated some people around the world, but man, to even motivate myself sometimes during the fact that, it's the emotions, it's the mental block, panic, it's dying to a dream, it's the process of grieving. It's, first of all, from a CEO point of view, which you are, and you having to overcome that first before you can really help then empower them to do it. I would love for you to expand on that, please, Sean.
I think it boils down to trust. And if you build a foundation of trust, people will be able to go through hardship with you. Mm-hmm. And so that's the other piece, that you can't suddenly wake up one day and say, all right, trust me or trust us, we're all going to be good. It's a building block, right? And so it's got to be It's got to be ingrained. And so, and it's the same with your family. It's the same with your friends or teammates or a team you want to build or a business. And so if you act, and it's not by words, you can't tell people, trust me. They've got to see in your actions that they can trust you.
That's right.
And I think that comes with transparency. I think it's about not, I think it's acknowledging what's in front of us. And we did, not sugarcoating it. It's about ensuring you create a personal connection with people so they, to the extent that you can, they can hear it from you, and they, you don't allow people to speculate on what's going on. And you be honest to the extent that you can. And if you say, look, I don't know what's happening out there. This is unprecedented. I can't speak to what's going to happen to us. But we all have to understand that we're going to try the best to always keep you informed. We're going to tell you if we're tracking or we're not tracking. And if there's imminent danger to the company or you, we're going to do our best to at least give you a heads up. Because the one thing people don't want is to be floating around. They have to have a sense of control. And if people have a sense of control for their own future and their lives, even if they can't necessarily make a dramatic change to what's going on, it allows them to deal with the pressure in a way that they're not driven by just total anxiety of the unknown. They say, at least I know that we're in the unknown and we're acknowledging it together and we're going to move it forward together. But the reality of it is, you know, there's this tendency also now where it's like, oh, we're all locked up and times are really tough. And so we need to all mollycoddle each other. And I think that's the wrong thing to do right now. We're in a struggle. We're in a struggle for survival. We're in a struggle to get through this. And you still have to basically create the framework with everybody that even though we're going to do all we can to be there for each other, to empathize with the fact that times are tough, we're going to actually be even harder in our assessments and our expectations to perform well. Because if we take our foot off the pedal at this time now, there's less chance of us all coming out on the other end. And so I think it's a balance of creating that foundation of trust, but not letting go of your expectations of excellence. Mm-hmm. And I think, quite frankly, it probably is comforting for people because they go, yeah, if we can bond together and work even harder and try even harder together, there's a great opportunity for us all to come out of it on the other end.
Yeah, it's really great. I want to add something in there that I think the two of you take for granted, probably because you're used to doing it. But you know, it also takes you being present, really, to know what your people need, to know how to say not just the right thing in these moments, but you know, to reach down. Like you said, Nick, sometimes you're the one who's struggling, sometimes even before your people are struggling. And I think this is a really important, and Sean, you and I have worked together many times over the years also. And what I watch you all do, and the two of you do it well, other people struggle to do it, so I think it's worth mentioning, is, you know, oftentimes the leaders, you're in front of everyone, right? You know what might happen in the business. You know, you're talking to other people. Your people are working. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They're trying to, at least. But you might know, we're going to have to pivot, or this is going to happen. And I know, Nick, you knew in January or February, you started talking about, this is coming. Public speaking probably is going to go away, all those things. And so I believe for leaders to be present with your people in where they are at any moment, you know, knowing how to talk to them and give them what they need in any moment, you know, even though you might be emotionally or intellectually in front of it, and maybe even over it, right? That's a common leadership thing, right? You've already dealt with and grieved the problem, but you haven't spoken to your team about it yet. And so I would just want to acknowledge that, right? Like, that's something that you both do, and it's worth mentioning because it's a skill. It takes practice, right, to be able to do that. And, you know, you can't motivate people. Like you said, Sean, they won't trust you if you're not actually there with them in that moment, having the empathy and listening and addressing their concerns.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, no, it's definitely something that It's really interesting because in some way, shape, or form, when one valve shuts off, going on again, being present, and then going though at the point of just one emotion and going, trying. I remember you, Chris, in your coaching with me in the last 16 weeks, you know, you wanted to have me come back into a real present mode where I'm there, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to have someone say, hey, you know, like, you know me for years, I'm someone that could have gone on the road, spoken like crazy outside of the nonprofit, you know, made a lot more money than I did in previous, but I chose not to speak and work as hard because I want to be at home with my family. Now, all of a sudden, the bread and butter is not coming in. I wasn't diversified. I didn't listen to the advice that I was given 2-3 years ago to really go online. People look at me like I'm like, I don't know. Like, how do you mean, Nick, you're not engaging with your 12 million social media fans? How are you not going more digital? How are you not building up the tribe? And I'm like, well, I guess I was just too comfortable with the old plan. Mm. And in my own mind, subconsciously for many, many years, I've wanted to get off the road. But bad enough, trust me, especially those nights and weeks that I'm not with my family, but it was just too easy. And in that panic of just doing something for the sake of trying to pivot, trying to reconstruct, but in a way that I didn't even take a breath. I feel like it's so important for people to also understand what I've now looking back, how would I have dealt this differently in the last 6 weeks? I would have breathed more a little bit. I would have talked to my team a little bit more. Mm. I would have talked to my wife a little bit more. Mm. It was like my personality, knowing that I'm pretty open and transparent, but I was pretty like for 16 weeks. And looking back, wish I didn't do it as much, but you know, it is what it is. But just trying to refrain those moving the goalposts, mm-hmm. right? Like, I didn't feel like I was in the same stadium. Mm-hmm. Forget about a goalpost movement. And it was hard for me, very, very hard for mm-hmm. me to grieve the responsibility as a leader, right? Number one, right? Health, make sure that my employees are healthy and safe. Number two, make sure that, you know, everyone's getting paid. What happens when you have that fear? It's like, well, I don't know. I've never heard of a PPP. I don't know if the speaking engagements are going to come back up. You're talking about a quarantine. How long could this be? Before the borders were shut all around the world in the speaking industry, there's 14-day quarantine. Do you think I really want to take another big contract next year because someone's a little optimistic that this is going to wash through, we're going to get a cure? And then I do a speaking engagement, and I was just thinking, what if I take – I got one in Africa. Nothing in South Africa. I wish it was. But I got an invitation to Africa. And I'm thinking, can you imagine if I got a 14-day quarantine in Africa on the way there and on the way back, I get a 14-day quarantine? Right. I mean, we're like, hey, wait a second, but this is like loyal employee on my book, not going to tell you who, on my books. And I'm like, and I've worked so hard as a family to bring, you know, these people with me, you know, it's just so much emotion that it's hard to stop mm-hmm. and breathe mm-hmm. and know that it's gonna be okay mm-hmm. and to only do what you know that you can do and accept that grievance that I felt emotions mm-hmm. defeated, depleted, mm-hmm. exhausted. And my wife looked at me, she said, I never seen you so lost. And it's not that I'm lost,
wow.
right? And I'm like, whoa, from my wife. Like, I lost my money the last time, 2011, in my personal financial crisis. And it was just when I met her 3 months into our relationship. And that's when you got to have everything all together and, you know, you got to show your best, blah, blah, blah. You know, you don't want to show any weakness. Here I am crying like a baby. I had panic attacks for days on end. Mm-hmm. Because in 2011, I went through the crisis. You know, she said, she turned around and said, don't worry, babe. I'll get a nursing job and support the both of us. Do you know what conversation I had with her today, this week? Chris, you're going to love that I'm actually sharing this. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's hard to be real on public.
It sure is.
But I told her, look, we're moving state, number one. We knew that. Number two, I told her, babe, you're going to forget about having a people can't even find a nursing job support, you know. And I'm like, I don't even know if we're going to be able to get through the next 6 months right. without you really having to help me as a caregiver. Can you imagine me wanting to be the Nick Vujicic motivational, empowering other people? And now I need to understand we're going to go into my mother-in-law's home before we buy into Texas because I feel there's going to be a real estate correction. I don't want to buy the next house where the price goes down. Thank God we bought low. We're selling high. Thank God we're good. Like we got food on the table. No problem on that. But just the pivoting point where I just triggered the okay today for us to now say yes to another $150,000 from the federal government. That oh, small business loan that we were able to get part from the PPP. And it's like, wow, I never thought that this late in my life, 37, 20 years of speaking, four children, I'm now in debt, now having to look at my wife and say, don't know if we're going to need a caregiver, no traveling, but you're going to have to give me a hand a little bit better than, not better, but more than before. Because we need to really look at what we need to do differently. And at the same time, Chris, Sean, I just had my first phone call with one of the biggest real estate companies in the nation, telling them that I'm not doing 35 to 45 speeches with that many different clients. And I'm looking for four clients speaking for them as a chief motivational officer, speaking four times per year for them and doing in-house coaching for that company. And I hang up the phone and I'm like, wow, do you know what I feel like? 2002, calling 53 schools, getting no's.
Right.
Once again. And it's like, cool, bring it on, reset the goalposts. I just got to make sure I'm in the right stadium. And it's well, just been raw. It's been amazing.
Look, it's, you know, you just did something amazing. I am proud of you, by the way. That was hard. Sean, you know that. You're a type A strong leader too. It's hard to admit like when you're in the middle of the new. And I want to address two things just so everybody gets what just happened, Nick, because wow, you're coachable. So proud of you. Is first of all, you know, for my leaders, you don't have to stay in that lost state for very long, right? I teach you resilience, you teach each other resilience, you're demonstrating it, Nick, right? To really just not be in denial, right? Get as real as we can, as quickly as possible. I'm gonna refer back to some of the things Sean was saying as he was talking about how do you motivate people? Well, part of it is you're just real, right? Like, let's look head on at what is actually happening so that I can address it head on. I can do what I can actually do. I'm not going to future trip too much. I'm not going to get stuck in the past. I'm just going to be present and kind of take one thing at a time, one day at a time, solving problems. The beauty for you, Nick, you know, is you do have experience. You have built your nonprofit, your for-profit business. So I've never been worried about you. Even in the moments, either of you, by the way, because I know, oh, you know how to do this. Might feel yucky when you're in it, but you're not gonna stay lost for very long. You're just in between the old and the new. And for my really successful superheroes like you guys, that's hard sometimes, right? It's hard to be the team that always wins the gold and be in that moment where this is the game we might lose.
Yeah, but you know, the thing about it is it's, you lose games, but it's not a, but it's a much broader journey, right? Life is not linear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by the, just the nature of personally and business and anything you do in life, nothing ever works like that. And the minute you start feeling that it's like that, you're going to be up for a huge upset. And so this is obviously, you know, pretty crazy, but the things that make, I mean, it was interesting, Nick, we were speaking, and the things that got you to, through your life and the challenges you dealt with, those things and that kind of ridiculous spirit and immense resilience and all of, I mean, I could go on forever how honored I am to be speaking to you. Those things didn't go away with the economic crisis. Those things are all there. That's what makes the essence of who you are. And so business will be good sometimes, business will be bad sometimes. But at the end of the day, health becomes the primary determinant, you know, because all bets are off, right? When that becomes a driver, but as please God, you have your health and you have your support of loved ones around you, that's the definition of wealth. And then everything else you do around that, I think, is accretive. Mm-hmm. And if you don't define yourself, and I'm saying you, I'm saying the collective you, don't define yourself by the trappings of materialistic success, I think it just gives people a better opportunity to be able to move the goalpost, because you define in the context of that what is the game you want to win today. Mm-hmm. And so in your context, you've got a new set of challenges. Establish a baseline for what your determination of success is. But I don't think you go 20 steps ahead. I think you basically set it, you get there, you reset, you look around, you say, okay, now that I'm here, now I look up there, what's the next step of success? And I think when people try and go all or nothing, that's a really tough life to live. And I think those are people who are going to really struggle with this, because you got to kind of see where you're getting the wins and the losses, you know. And it's interesting. I would, like, my daughter is not necessarily going to go back to school, and my son's graduating college and he's not going to have the graduation, and everyone to their own, we're all living at home. So you find yourself saying, well, people are dying and people are unemployed. At least we've got food on the table, but it doesn't take away the pain from the person who's feeling that pain. It's still their loss. So it's not to discount every individual's personal loss, but then it's to reframe and say, yes, you lost, but now you have to put it back, and now you've got to look forward. You've got to say, what's the next level of success? And so I think in that context, that's the only way you can get through this. Otherwise,
I love that. You know, it's interesting, that word that we said earlier, trust, right? So one of the reasons as well why I've told my wife, first of all, our nonprofit's going great. It's everything on the motivational speaking circuit that's just like faucets have closed off. And it's when Nick Vujicic moves state, he can't take his caregivers with him. I don't just find these people. You talk about trust. You talked about trust. Trusting yourself, trusting the people around you, your team to trust you. I mean, I even got allergic when people used to say, you're giving them an instruction and they say, leave it with me. And I actually have not allowed anybody to tell me those words, because there was one person who always said that. And in the end, I couldn't leave it with them. And so my team knows to actually never, because it's a trigger phrase for me. And so trust is, I need counseling on that still, but trust is such a big thing. And it's like, you know, when you need to trust yourself and your leadership now moving forward, right? You kind of, I'm going to tell you right now, here's my biggest two fears that I've had to go through. It's feeling like, first of all, you can't be everyone's savior. You shouldn't be saving anybody. And when we do what we can and you can only do what you do, then you're also, though, I'm triggered, I'll talk about me, about the fear of disappointment. And that it's like, man, I And Chris, you and I, like, we headbutt off camera, and you're like, Nick, you know, you're just personality A, and you just gotta do 69 different things, and you just gotta hit them all.
I think I usually say you're doing 169 different things.
So I was like, but I'm like, you know, and you know, we've had those conversations, like everyone's saying, you're doing too much. And I'm saying, I'm the hustler, I'm the entrepreneur, like you just figure it out. And I'm like, oh yeah, sure. You know, maybe it was because I was born with that arms and legs. And when someone says to me, you can't do it, it's like, it gets me fired up just to prove them wrong. And he was like, well, is that an ego thing? I'm like, no, it's not an ego thing. It's just how I am. And it's not. But here it is, right? Like, talk about a move. What was so beautiful for me is the attitude of gratitude. Like, talk about the four foundations for me in my life, right? Going back to the basics that enable you to pause, that enable you to reset, that enable you to move the goalposts. For me, it's faith and family. Do you know that my wife fully trusts the decisions I've made? She wouldn't even suggest. She's like, you know, with that and that and that that I bring up, it's your decision. And that was so freeing. And that helped me to also trust myself with my discernment. Grounded in my faith and my family, they're in doing everything you can in the financial department to make not just the best decisions to survive, but try help as many people come still in the boat with me. As a leader, Sean, there are people listening right now and watching who needed to tell people to, sorry, you can't be on the boat anymore, or there is no boat.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you tell them about? I mean, we're talking going from gold to bronze. Now you're not on the boat. There is no boat. How do you...
Yeah,
help
really
someone
tough
rebuild
messages.
Their focus. Maybe, Chris, you have a better wording on verbiage on this question to Sean, but number one, there is no boat, or number two, there is a boat, but man, it's a life raft right now. We can't take it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a tough question because, you know, my life experience is such that we're not in that situation that a lot of people are in. And a lot, and thank goodness we've been able to, at the moment, keep all of our people on the boat. And so that's not the definition. But I think, and it's not to downplay the gravity of the situation, because, you know, you can start hearing yourself saying like, oh, you know, buck up and be positive and look for the silver lining. And I don't think that's reasonable advice, because people are one paycheck away or one stimulus check away from absolute devastation. When you look at the country now, the amount of people that are having to go to food lines and food banks, mm-hmm. it's very worrying. And the other part of it is the extended nature of what this thing might look like. There's a push to come back early. There's going to be a consequence. There's a push to delay. And there's a significant consequence. So there's not an easy answer for it. So it's a little disingenuous to say that, but I do think that what people have to do is they got to reset the goalpost. And if that goalpost means I got to feed my family, that's my primary objective. Or I have to find a way to pivot into an industry that is surviving. And so I think there needs to be an acceptance of the reality of what's out there. But if anyone wants to sit and, you know, it's kind of like the fight, flight, or freeze.
That's right.
This is not a time to freeze.
That's
and
right.
This is not a time to flight.
That's right.
It's a time to fight. And it's a time to fight with direction, you know. So people have to look at what's out there, and they got to say, how do I, whatever that is, it getting a job? Is it extending, moving to a different industry? Is it feeding their family? And then they have to come up with a strategy for how they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. But if they, and so it's about taking control and saying, what are the actions I have to take in order to move to that next level or sustain my family or myself? Mm-hmm. And then come up with an objective and then come up with action steps behind that objective very specifically, and then be really, really disciplined in acting on that. But if anyone just basically freezes and doesn't define an action plan,
it's very true,
they're going to get left behind. They're going to be in significant trouble. It's not to say that people with an action plan won't, but it's going to give them a crack at it. It's the same as trying to keep a business running. The ones that come up with a very clear sense of what they're dealing with, which is a reality check, and then basically starts putting in place very defined objectives with actions, are the ones that are going to have a better chance of stepping ahead, stepping again, and hopefully getting through it. But not having a plan and not having an object, a plan to achieve whatever that specific objective is, I think it's going to be devastation.
Mm-hmm. Look, I just want to say, and we didn't plan this, and it's beautiful the way this has happened, but Nick just did a podcast called Setting Practical Goals. So it's interesting because we didn't coordinate this, this detailed level. We couldn't, right? I didn't even know that you were going to post that one or do it the other day. But I agree with you wholeheartedly, Sean. Like, I feel like, you know, whatever people can do to get through their primal fears, to get into a practical action planning. I love that you referred back to fight or flight or freeze. Agreed. Like, it is not the time to freeze. 100%. Like, we're all in this together. And, you know, if we have too many people freezing, we're all in trouble, right? So everybody's got to move forward, even if it's slow.
Yeah.
I just get to the action planning mode, get help, ask for help, yeah. Right? Some things that some people aren't comfortable with. Like I was saying, you know, for leaders, those of you who are used to being successful and motivating people, and for, you know, like you were saying early, Sean, you know, when things are going great, we don't think about a lot of this stuff. You said it, Nick, right? Like, I got comfortable. Yeah, we all got comfortable.
I mean, if ever there was a time, you know, you talk about communities helping each other. I mean, mm-hmm. this is the time, right? And when you look at, Nick, the millions of people whose lives you've touched, right? And changed their lives and given people hope and a perspective. I mean, it's time for communities to step up and help each other. And I think it's also time for people to, like you said, Chris, to not feel too proud to ask their communities to help each other, because quite frankly, it's the only thing that's going to get us through this.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's just hard, you know, for the personality A, but you're absolutely right. You know, like, I know it took, and I just want to encourage everyone, like, everything that was said was just absolutely on point and straight up true for you watching or listening right now. And I just want you to know that it took me 4 weeks of just mental blah and then 2 weeks of panic before I could even think straight. And I'm strong in my faith. I'm strong in my family. I'm strong in my foundation. But it was all to say, like, wow, even I know other people that have also been paralyzed with panic. And you look at them and like, why would you be panicked? Like, I remember also texting my first cousin in Australia. And I said, yeah, I've just, you know, I'm dealing with a little anxiety. He said, you? Anxiety? Why can't I be anxious? And he's like, I didn't think you'd ever be a person that would ever get anxious. And I'm like, nah, yeah, I can be. And, you know, opening up. And I think giving yourself time, it's almost like I was trying to do the correlation of when I was born in Australia. And it took my mum 4 months to come to terms with dying to the dream of having a able-bodied kid, to then dealing with the fear between rational and irrational, which is what we all have to go through. And then trying to do the shift of being thankful for what you have, coming up with that foundation of the purpose and identity and value of why we do what we do, why to keep on going, to then coming up with an action plan and going for it. I love those three things you said. Flight, freeze, or fight. Did I say them in the right order?
Flight, fight, flight, freeze.
Freeze, yeah.
I love that. I love that.
There's a really great book that I read. I don't know why, you know, I read quite a bit. Business books. Chris, had a big impetus on that when she was coaching me many years ago. She put me onto, you know, the Patrick Lencioni books, mm-hmm. which were wonderful. And I like to study this type of stuff, leadership, and especially as a coach. You know, I read you study from other coaches, right? It's none of this is, and it's all the same. It's all the same. Leadership and the ability to impact, and then the neuroscience of pressure. And so I actually read a great book, which is amazing, because I read it relatively close to all of this, about six, seven months ago, called Perform Under Pressure by a guy named Kerry Evans. And it really made a huge difference in my life. It's a book that I wish that I had read when I was in my 20s, when I had red hair and I was a bit of a hothead. But really it speaks to, it's literally teaching you how to perform under pressure. And what better time to be prepared for that is mm-hmm. now. And I've taken a lot from that book, and that fight, flight, or freeze was definitely one of the elements. But it's also about, it's not just about fighting, it's about fighting properly. It's about keeping focus mm-hmm. when you're fighting. And also, you know, the neuroscience of humans is to either go to the extreme blue side of your brain, the logic, or to the extreme reactive side of your brain, which is the caveman. And it's just trying to be aware of kind of where the way you're feeling is first saying, why am I feeling this way? And it's driven by neuroscience. And then trying to say, okay, how do I kind of manage it in a way that I can get the best outcome? And if you can actually master that, it helps you for yourself. How do I get the best outcome for me? But most importantly, whether you're leading your family or your friends or a company or your community, it's how do you get the best outcome for the people that you're impacting? The scenario that you're dealing with is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. The pandemic's still there.
That's right.
And or whatever that element providing the pressure is. And so I found that has actually made a massive impact, a practical impact on the fact that I'd read it relatively close to what was going on. Mm-hmm. I draw from it quite a bit.
It's a great suggestion, Sean. There's another one too that Nick, Sean, or maybe anybody watching, it's called The Inner Game of Stress. And the author is Tim Galway. He's been around for a long time. His first book, I think, was either Inner Game of Tennis or Inner Game of Golf. I can't remember who he was coaching first. It's a great series. It's not new. It's timeless. Anybody could get some really great tips for, under pressure, right? So whether you're a professional golfer, professional tennis player, or you're a leader during the pandemic, pressure is pressure.
So I think looking for those things, whether it's the Bible or looking for it in, you know, I read Man's Search for Meaning, which actually mm-hmm. your dad had told me about, Chris. Mm-hmm. And I would always put it off. And there's no worse time in the world to read Man's Search for Meaning. It's not an easy read. But on the other hand, there's no better time in the world to read Man's Search for Meaning, right? And to some extent, it's not dissimilar to your experience. It's like, if you could overcome what you've overcome in your life, which was done by, I look at it, I go like, there's nothing that can't be accomplished for you and definitely for anyone who is in a different situation.
Sean, I appreciate that encouragement. I love you very much. And it's been an honor here on this show. I wanted to pass it back to both of you. Any last kind of summary or comment or leaving our audience on some nugget leaving today? I would love whoever would like to start But Sean, what a rich conversation. This has been a rich, real, deep, and very robust conversation that really has been real and awesome. And I love you. But I might actually go to first Chris. And Chris, tell us, for those who are watching, what would you recommend?
I would say, just like you did, this is so good that I would put this on repeat. This podcast with the two of you, just keep listening. There's so much gold in here that if you just take one or two things and actually put it into action, it's really going to work. So, yeah, put this on your playlist and listen to it over and over again.
First of all, I wanted to thank both of you for letting me share this with you. It's been a very rich experience for me. Really, my broadest issue is gratitude for you guys to have thought that I have anything to impart in somebody like you and obviously Chris. I think the biggest guidance I can give is take care of yourself and then take care of the people around you. That's it. If you can keep yourself healthy physically and mentally, then you're able to give to others. And so it starts with looking inward, getting yourself strong, and then doing everything you can to kind of help people get through this. It's a pretty tough time. And so everyone needs to be there for each other.
I love it. Thank you to the both of you. It's such an honor to get to know you, Sean, and connect this way to impart a lot of wisdom and experience and nuggets from the both of you that really I know are going to impact lives. So here on Moving the Goalposts episode here on the Leadership Now series, I am so deeply moved and I'm encouraged. I'm uplifted. And I love how, Sean, you've just been real and open. And again, it's an honor to have you here. Chris, thank you so much for organizing this and facilitating this. I'm looking forward to next Leadership Now series program with you on about trust. Mm-hmm. That word was used today. And you could see me as like, it's such a big thing for me. It's a big thing for everyone out there right now. And how do we trust also those around us to do what they're supposed to be doing in delegation and accountability and a team base? You know, there's a lot of different modes of operation right now with quarantine still in play. And you being the one to really be on daily calls with we're talking 50 Fortune companies dealing with the same issues that any leader of any size company is dealing with. And so thank you for your encouragement, Chris, moving forward with the series. I'm so excited for the next episode. Thank you for watching. Please share it, rate it, review it, and think of someone else who may need to start tuning in like you're tuning in on the Leadership Now series with Chris and Nick. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening. Help us reach as many people as possible by giving us a rating, a review, and subscribing to this podcast. Love you so much. And remember, share this with anyone you know who needs to hear this as well. I'll see you next week.